Camilla is often referred to as a horse-mad woman. Eva, can you translate that?
Yeah, that means that she likes horses.
Okay.
It seems to have started when she was a very young child.
When she lived in the country, had a pony, rode her pony to school, you know.
Went to pony dances, whatever those are.
As one does. And this whole, like, pony thing really stuck with her until she was a grown woman.
A pony woman. And then she met a pony man, and the rest is history.
That's true. Girls who love ponies grow up into women who occasionally become hunters. Astride a horse in the English countryside.
Watch out, poor little innocent foxes.
And that is what happened here with Queen Camilla.
I'm Eva Walchover.
And I'm Allie Merriam. This is Winsors and Losers, the podcast that tells you an overlooked story about the British royal family in every episode.
And this season, we're looking at one aspect of the new Queen Camilla's life in every episode. Today, Camilla the Hunter.
So let's talk about what we'll talk about. First, Camilla's upbringing as a real horse gal. Ponies. She loved them. Second, her family, Charles, and hunting. What even is a hunt to us uninitiated Americans? And finally, the interesting and somewhat complicated connection between riding and sex that was only brought to my attention at the near age of 40 by no less a luminary than Tina Brown.
I don't think it's that complicated, Allie.
What do people say at the beginning of a horse race?
Mush? Tally-ho? I don't know.
L-A-Z! Something like that.
I think they use pistols.
I see. Okay, part one. Once a horse gal, always a horse gal.
So, we've established Camilla loves horses, grew up loving horses. Her love of horses started with a love of ponies. To quote her biographer, Penny Junor, small ponies turned into larger ponies.
Junor really is, as we've said in other episodes, a pretty authoritative voice on Camilla's young life. I was actually shocked in researching this season that there aren't a lot of books or even articles that really get into Camilla's life. So I think we're doing a public service by putting this season out there, frankly.
I think you're right. There's like the Penny Junor book, then there's the Giles Brandreth book, which is a biography of her and Charles together. Then there's not a lot of other stuff.
So we lean pretty heavily on Junor when it comes to revisiting Camilla's pony mad childhood. And Junor wrote that from the age of 5 onwards, a series of, quote, adorable ponies. Horses were at the heart of Camilla's childhood, and they are standing her in good stead now. Making small talk with the queen is not easy unless you understand horses and dogs. Camilla is totally at home with both. I mean, I respect Junor as the official biographer here, and definitely she is our, like, Camilla childhood horse-loving correspondent, but, like, she really can put it on thick.
Yeah. I think also, like, this is safe territory, right? It's not getting into any controversial material when you're talking about the royal family and their love of horses, so she can lay it on thick here.
As far as getting the general public to love Camilla, this is a pretty good strategy. It's like, she's great. She liked ponies as a kid. Yeah, it's so uncontroversial. She had a cup of milk every night at dinner.
Mm-hmm. She rode her pony to school.
Yes. Junor also adds that she rode with the pony club, she went to pony club camp, and she learned to hunt with the South Down. She notes that the terrain is strongly fenced vale, wooded weald, and open downland. I don't know what any of that means, but it sounds exceedingly English, which is why I wanted to include it in this episode.
It sounds lovely, but also scary if you're a fox.
I think if you're a child on a pony who is galloping through wooded weald, you do become queen.
It's your destiny. You're galloping towards the throne.
It is. So horses made up a lot of young Camilla's social life, but the reason for that is because it was something that basically ran in her family. Her father, Bruce, and her uncles, generally the whole extended Shand and on the mother's side, Cubitt family, like, they're just horse people. Another biographer, Giles Brandreth, has said that the Shands and the Cubitts have long been serious hunting families. Camilla's great uncle, Charles Cubitt, was for many years the master of the Crawley and Horsham hounds. Her father, Bruce, at age only 39, was appointed joint master of the celebrated Southdown hunt next door. Again, many words that I don't entirely know what they mean, but I do believe that they establish
that they liked horses.
Yeah, that Camilla sort of had like a biological DNA birthright to be a horse gal.
Yeah.
I like this.
And that there's something wrong with you if you don't like it.
Brandreth, just to make sure the point is crystal clear, he wrote, they were horsey people, county people, country people. he should have written people, people. They were people.
They were people, 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 people. So Giles Brandreth, again, he quotes a childhood friend of Camilla's. This childhood friend, quote, attributes Camilla's youthful confidence and equanimity to her experience of horses and the quality of her parenting. There's a certain boldness required to riding, hunting, and jumping, he says, and that's shown through with Camilla.
I mean, I feel like you just need confidence in life. Like, mm-hmm. to grow up, you need confidence. But maybe if you ride horses, you have more confidence. I don't know. I wouldn't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't know either. But it makes sense, I guess. You know, it requires a certain amount of risk taking. It's fast. You're high up. You're having to put a lot of trust in the horse.
I'd just like to like state for the record that I'm not a horse person pretty much at all. I had one really bad experience with a horse. I don't want to get into it here, but I'm holding a grudge.
Okay. That makes sense. I like being comfortable.
Yeah, me too. Like extremely comfortable.
Like if there was a way to put a sofa on the back of a horse.
I know that because the picture that comes up when you call me is you wrapped in a huge down blanket.
That's me.
Yeah. So hunting was normalized for Camilla from a young age. She was into horses. The family was into hunting. So she was going to start hunting whenever you come of age. I don't know. Is it like after you get your first period, you can go on a horse or whatever? Is there some kind of like,
I mean, like when you graduate from pony to horse, you mean?
Yeah. Or when you can start
hunting.
Yeah. You go from pony to huntress. This is the point at which I would reflect that it is kind of interesting to me that there's this juxtaposition between Diana, who was, I mean, the name means goddess of hunting, and mm-hmm. Camilla. Diana was not a hunter.
Yeah, she was an interesting outlier in that she was from an even posher family than Camilla's, who you'd assume would be also very horsey, grew up in an enormous stately home, but they weren't really horsey.
They weren't horsey. And even though this is sort of a simple point, it was in a Tina Brown book that the point became clear to me. She noted something along the lines of Camilla being a countryside character and Diana, despite her name, being an essentially metropolitan character, which mm-hmm. is true. Diana liked the ballet and seeing friends and like visiting the south of France, whereas Camilla, I feel like leaving the country is something she does only under duress.
Right.
Hunting actually went on to play sort of a memorable role in the Camilla-Diana relationship because Diana later confided in Andrew Morton when they were conspiring on her pseudo-biography that during the time she had lunch with Camilla, Diana recalled Camilla saying, "You're not going to hunt, are you?" And Diana said, "On what?" And Camilla said, "Horse, you're not going to hunt when you go and live at Highgrove, are you?" And Diana says she said no, and that Camilla followed up, "I just wanted to know." And mm-hmm. Diana believed that that was Camilla basically establishing that she still had that direct route to Charles.
Yeah, that was a safe way to spend time with Charles, that Diana wasn't going to be around, that she could still own the hunt.
Exactly. And it was because of Camilla that Charles even really discovered hunting. He didn't hunt when they first met, but over the years through her, he started to find it really thrilling. The queen hadn't hunted, though her father had been an enthusiast. So because of his connection to Camilla, Charles got in on the fun.
Yeah, and I guess we should establish what we mean by hunting. What is a hunt?
Yes, this is point two. WTF is a hunt. This is obviously not something that happens that often in America. I know there are still today people who in like countryside areas who fancy themselves like vaguely British.
Oh yeah, well, where my mom lives in Virginia, hunting is a big thing. And in fact, Brits come over to hunt in Virginia.
Fascinating. And they sort of dress up in like colonial garb, no?
Yeah, they do. You know, if you Google pictures of Camilla hunting, the navy blue the Jodhpurs. They wear all that. They have Master of the Hounds. It's interesting. There are a lot of British people that live around where she is in Northern Virginia because of the hunt there.
It sounds a bit like Paul Revere cosplay to me, but more on that later. Okay, here's the 411 on what a hunt is. So it's usually people on horseback stomping around the countryside on horses to chase and formerly kill foxes. So the dogs like run ahead and try to sniff out the foxes. Do the dogs kill the foxes or do the hunters kill the foxes?
The dogs do.
I see. Okay.
It's brutal.
Sounds like it. I think that the like rationale, at least in England, was that there are an excess of foxes and they can be like pests in the countryside, right?
That was always the justification for it. And I was actually reading an interesting article about the history of fox hunting. And essentially what happened is deer stalking had been the aristocratic hunting game of choice until like the 18th century, when the land started being much more carved up and farms were getting smaller. And so people had to confine their hunts to small, they couldn't stalk a deer over hundreds of acres. And so fox hunting was popularized because it could happen in smaller areas.
Interesting. It's a pretty expensive sport because you have to firstly keep a horse, which is quite pricey.
A pack of dogs, pack of hounds.
Maintain hounds and then get the right outfit, which is usually pretty specific and relative to like the individual hunt you're participating in. Mm-hmm. So it's often people who have a lot of disposable income, but I was intrigued that during the research of this, there's also a lot of people who live in the countryside who this is, again, sort of like a hereditary hobby, and they'll skimp on other areas so that they can participate in this pastime that they really love to do. So while it is a highly symbolic old-timey aristocrat thing to do, I think it also has a pretty strong hold in the countryside. This probably sounds really obvious to any British person.
Please forgive us.
Yeah. The UK did pass a fox hunting ban in 2004, so you can no longer kill the foxes, but people do still go and have the dogs like run about and sort of chase a scent of a fox.
Yeah, they scent trails so that the dogs are sent down specific trails where they think that they're following the scent of a fox, but it's fake. But of course, there's a lot of debate about whether or not they're actually following the law and that probably they're still killing foxes. It's just that it's hard to keep tabs.
Yeah. And also like if a dog happens to kill a fox, I mean, that could happen on a day where they're not hunting anyway.
Yeah. How do you prove it? It's still legal in Northern Ireland, which I learned today, which is interesting.
Wow. That is what it's to like participate in a capital H hunt. But one thing that was confusing to me is that there's also like individual hunts. So they'll be like the named TK Hunt and that Charles and Camilla, like the Beaufort Hunt, which is sort of managed by the Duke of Beaufort. And they still do this. They'll do the whole like following the scent hunt. And it's the most prestigious hunt. The dogs that participate in this hunt are, they live in luxury. They live at Badminton House, which is the Duke's estate. And I think this hunt goes back something like 400 years or something.
Yeah.
So Charles and Camilla would do this. They would like wear the outfit that goes with the Beaufort hunt, and they'd go out occasionally with other hunts.
They even picked their houses so that their houses would be near the Beaufort hunt.
I mean, I guess that makes sense, right?
You live near your hobbies, yeah.
Interestingly, Charles and Camilla separately got houses that were near this hunt. Mm-hmm. It was Camilla's first married home with her husband, Andrew Parker Bowles, when they bought Bowley Hyde Manor that fell within the territory of the Beaufort hunt. And this, despite the fact that Andrew only hunted occasionally, he wasn't like super interested in hunting. But then Charles, when it came time for him to buy a Highgrove, he was like, okay, this works because it's near the hunt.
Yeah. We should also clarify, I guess, that part of the way it works with hunting, or the way it works with hunting, is that you're allowed, if you're part of the Beaufort hunt, for example, the hunt club, you can, the horses and dogs are allowed to hunt on and cross neighboring farms and land. Like it sort of becomes, you give permission for the Beaufort hunt to use your land for hunting because they have to cross many, you know, acres when the dogs are chasing down this scent.
That was interesting too, that is part of how this is a countryside hobby, There's something called the right to roam, where the hunt is tied up with ideas of freedom of access and almost the antithesis of private property. And so when this ban went into effect in 2004, it was incredibly controversial. There was something like the hunting counter protest in London was one of the most attended protests, I think, in British history. And any restriction on this, I think, kind of strikes at the heart of this country identity.
Yeah, it's a real class war. And I was reading today, you probably read this article too in the New York Times, about how the activists, so the anti-fox hunters who believe that the fox hunting clubs are still killing foxes, they've learned the techniques and tactics of the hunt clubs. So they've learned how to blow their horns and make the calls that direct the dogs what to do. And so they'll follow the hunt clubs on horseback and in their cars and try to confuse the dogs by blowing the horns and calling out to them. And wow, it's become this real war. And in fact, a few clubs, major clubs, have shut down as a result of these protests. But it's really, really angry and contentious. And there's YouTube videos, because they all record each other. Like the activists will record the hunters trying to catch them killing the foxes. And then the fox hunters will record the activists. And so the YouTube videos have thousands of views.
Iconic. For what it's worth, Camilla's children, Tom and Laura, were never on Team Hunt. And it turned out that there were problems with Camilla's enthusiasm. For both her and Charles, they got some flack around the year 2000 because it was really expensive for them to be protected while they were hunting. We spoke a bit about the class nuances of hunting, and the optics were bad when it was revealed that it took 50,000 pounds of extra security money to watch Charles and Camilla when they were traipsing through the countryside on horseback. I mean, this makes sense. And if they were going to do the Beaufort hunt 5 times in 1 year, because I guess this isn't just a one-time only annual event, that came to over 200,000 pounds. So that was bad optics.
Just for the security. Wow.
And once this whole ban was getting into high gear and it was likely to be passed and there was tons of civic furor and protesting, it was pretty clear from the Queen that none of the royals should be seen hunting foxes. They were always able to hunt and stalk deer. Let's be clear. They could still hunt. So this is where, and I very pettily say, recollections may vary about why Charles eventually stopped hunting on horseback, because there were all these wild reports all over the place. So the Standard, October 2003, says Camilla Parker Bowles has been forced to give up her beloved fox hunting because of a bad back. Okay, sure. Guardian, 2004. Such is the heir to the throne, Charles's predilection for the chase, the hunt, that it is well attested he's defied his mother's advice that he should scale back or stop his hunting activities. And apparently she had wanted him to stop because his support for the hunt was getting too political. So Charles was like, I'm going to do me, but thanks for weighing in, Mom.
It's true. It's even just hunting during that era was a political statement. To continue to hunt
truly
was political.
But then we come back to Juniper, Camilla's biographer. And Juniper wrote that the Queen's advisors were anxious that Charles would upset the anti-blood sports lobby, but she thought him old enough to make up his own mind. So Charles continued to hunt. Anyway, TLDR, they had to stop because it was deemed illegal.
Also, it's not only did they have to stop because it was banned, but at that point, you can't align yourself with just the most elitist pastime. As a member of the royal family, you can't escape it because you're a member of the royal family. So you have to do everything you can to try to take yourself down a few notches.
Truly. So November 2004, the hunting ban passes, and thusly ends the era of Camilla and Charles hunting at the Beaufort Hunt.
As far as we know.
Exactly. So that brings us to part 3, the unavoidable. We have tried to avoid this, believe it or not, but hunting is linked to sex, according to some armchair analysis. And for this portion, I'm going to outsource the entire analysis to no less a literary luminary than Tina Brown, former editor of Vanity Fair and The New Yorker, whose book, The Diana Chronicles, really sums up this whole sordid affair.
Prepare yourselves.
Yeah, put down any breakables. Quote, women who love horses usually love sex. It's no accident that for girls, the onset of puberty is often marked by an obsession with horse flesh. Hunting, Charles's other favorite recreational activity, has always been an aphrodisiac. The adrenaline, the fresh air, and the tally-ho exhilaration are all big libido boosters, to say nothing of all that throbbing, galloping animal vitality between one's thighs. Women who hunt love risk as much as men do, and as a rule, husbands and wives rarely hunt together. There's no set time to come home before dark, so the sporting day can extend erotically into twilight with alibis still intact.
I'm sweating.
Now, I have some qualms with the content of this quote, but I must say, the wording is masterful. Turns of phrase employed by a woman just like at the height of the craft.
Even the phrase, the sporting day can extend erotically.
Yes, that stood out to me as well.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, shudder. So I think that is maybe like a generalization to say that women who love horses all love sex. I don't know.
Basically, what she's telling us is that hunting was foreplay for Camilla and Charles. And I'm really sorry for saying that sentence. I regretted it as soon as it left my mouth.
I accept your apology. regrettably, Tina Brown's not the only one to have made this assertion or allegation. In 2005, former Prime Minister Boris Johnson wrote in The Spectator that he, quote, loved hunting with dogs in part because of the, quote, semi-sexual relation with the horse and the military-style pleasure of moving as a unit.
Okay, that's one step too far. I can't handle that.
I guess this is, I can't say a widely held belief, but it's not an uncommonly held belief.
Yeah.
I will say that the sex thing potentially being true, like, okay, we'll accept that that possibly may be the case. But I think that women being able to hunt, which is probably traditionally a men's activity, could be seen as something that's like liberating for women. And of course, like that goes hand in hand with like women owning their sexuality as well. So this idea was supported by someone named Erica Monkwitz, who in the scholarly journal Critical Survey wrote, British women were able to use their participation in equestrian activities to advance strong, independent identities for themselves while also helping to create and reinforce a specifically British national identity through horse sports. I prefer this take.
Yeah, I like that. That's really interesting. And, you know, I think that there's a lot to that. And I imagine, too, that like traditionally women would have ridden side saddle and hunting would require them to sit astride a horse. So there's also that kind of like freedom of movement and ability to participate in this risk-taking sport that does sound really liberating.
That quote prompts me to think about Camilla more broadly and sort of the general thesis of this season that we're doing, which is, you know, viewing Camilla through this lens as a huntress and being, you know, a risk-taking, strong woman who's a force astride a horse doing this controversial hobby kind of in a devil-may-care way, like despite the detractors. It's like a metaphor for her whole public existence and her adult life.
Her stamina.
Yeah, as a way, I see this as like her strength. And, you know, there's a lot of drama with everything that they've been through. And in a way, I think that we're at the beginning of a sort of recasting of Camilla actually as someone with a really strong backbone. And I'm interested in sort of exploring what that means as somebody who's like pushed on despite, you know, public opprobrium and then hear like literal protests.
Mm-hmm. That's a really interesting point, Allie. And I would even add to that, that hunting is an activity that Charles and Camilla do together. In fact, she introduced him to it. And it's something that they used to share rather than like Camilla being the wife or the girlfriend who cheers Charles on from the stands while he's playing polo, which is a kind of image that we're more used to. And so there's also like this image of her on equal footing with him that plays out in the hunt that is worth noting.
Yeah. I mean, Camilla is queen. So she's like entering her girl boss season. Mm-hmm. at the ripe old age of however how old she is. But back to hunting and sex. Basically, there's this big social side to hunting. And apparently there's like hunt balls where people drink a lot and like sexual tension bubbles to the surface. And part of that is looking the part.
It's those tight, tight jodhpurs.
And just peeling them off. Giles Brandreth kind of negged Camilla. He wrote, until quite recently, when Camilla was caught on camera, you felt there was something not quite right with her grooming. But when hunting, she always looked immaculate. In every way, she is her father's daughter. Then, this is me, not Giles. Apparently, the father had this view of hunting that people couldn't turn up as if they've been wearing the same pajamas for a month. Like he said, you got to look right to do the job. And that's been passed down to Camilla as far as hunting is concerned.
Yeah. And, you know, that's another example of just the elite nature of this sport, how not only is it so expensive to keep the hounds and keep the horses and have the land on which to hunt, one must wear these very specific and very expensive clothes that if you're part of this inner world, you know exactly the color to wear, the cut to wear, the type of jacket to wear to the hunt club that you're participating in, because they all have their own unique uniforms. And so if you aren't from that world, there's so many opportunities to misstep. And so it's like yet another example of how they partition themselves off from the riffraff.
And it's one of the things that Charles liked about Camilla when he met her. He knew that she was one of these like country people who got it without having to have it explained, mm-hmm. which is truly the essence of like exclusionary social groups.
Exactly.
But I digress. Right now, Eva and I are looking at 5 pictures of Camilla astride a horse. And actually, like, she makes hunting on a horse look pretty good.
Effortless.
In one of the pictures, she's taking like a wicked big drag on a cigarette. We don't endorse smoking, but, you know, time and place. And then in another one, she's got like some sort of, what is that? Like a wine glass? What is she drinking?
It's definitely not water.
No.
No one's drinking water at these hunts.
Which I respect. Sure. People like aggressively hydrate, and I just don't think most people need that much water, but that's a conversation for another day.
I think Camilla agrees with you there. Yeah. She really looks good. She pulls off the outfit. She's not just, you know, as my Texan great grandmother used to say about cowboys who weren't really cowboys, they're all hat and no horse. She's definitely dressed the part and playing the part. She knows the part.
She's got these like brass buttons and big old lapels. The uniform looks as though it hasn't changed in hundreds of years. Now, there's also a link to a video of Camilla and some others on their horses, like trotting through the countryside. And I have to say that as an American, I'm triggered because this video of them all in their hunting costume is giving the British are coming and I don't like it.
Yeah, you're just immediately throwing your tea in the river.
Yeah, I do not like that. Well, Eva, this brings us to our final section, the winners and losers questions.
Allie, what does this tell you about Camilla?
I think it speaks a bit about like the duality of Camilla. On one hand, she's super traditional. And then on the other, she's assertive. Like seeing a woman who's really into this hobby in particular, it makes me think and it makes me a little more intrigued by the Camilla story because so much of what we know about her is through this lens of the other woman. And I think that she's had a pretty rich and complex life on her own.
Yeah.
How about you?
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it too, because I also think this is like Camilla's link back to her own family, to the Shands. This is not a hobby that she, or a pastime that she took up when she married into the royal family or when she met Charles. This is something that she brought to their relationship that her father passed down to her. And I like these little glimpses into whether or not, or no matter how I feel about hunting, I like these glimpses into her as a person and into her background, because she is a pretty enigmatic figure.
Yeah, that's a good point. And at no point in this episode did we even talk about our own feelings on hunting, which good for us, because who cares?
Yeah.
who's the Windsor in this story?
I'm going to say British tailoring, because if you Google Camilla fox hunting, as you'll see, these are some well-cut clothes. And it's a testament to the eye-wateringly expensive art of bespoke hunting wear. What about you, Allie?
I'm just going to say Tina Brown for the hell of it. This gave me a really good opportunity to revisit some of her writing, and that was fun for me. And frankly, I don't care about horses, and I don't care about the British aristocrats like shagging in the bushes after their hunts. So for me, it's all about Tina.
Who's the loser?
The loser is me for having to utter the words horse flesh on a podcast that definitely my parents and possibly other people will listen to. I'm sorry. How about you?
And I would say me for having to hear you say the word horse flesh, as well as that whole section on hunting and sex.
I know. I have mixed feelings about it, but I'll be discussing them later with my therapist. I mean, the things we do for this podcast.
Huge sacrifices. Huge, huge sacrifices.
But nonetheless, we'll do it again soon.
Let's. All right. Bye, Allie.
Bye. Winsers and Losers is created and hosted by us, Eva Walchover and Allie Merriam. It's mixed by Kristen Muller. Special thanks to Lee Lawrence for the beautiful silhouette of Camilla in this season's art. Please like, listen, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.